This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to Province Sports Radio, back after a week off of both Ed and I, refreshed, ready to go. Ed, we both traveled, but we did not go to China, whereas the Vancouver Canucks and the LA Kings are, as you reported today. What do you think of the strategy?
Well, it's fascinating on any one of a number of levels, but to me, I don't know how you can view this independent of the NHL's participation in the Olympics. And this, to me, you know, now this becomes such a critical issue for Gary Bettman's administration, because I don't know how you announce this, comprehensive long-term strategy to establish a toehold in China, and then pass on the biggest opportunity to expose your game in that part of the world in 2018, and what that says about 2020. To me, this just screams that, yes, we're going to get to the Olympics in 2018 and 2022.
So explain this to me a little bit, because you're obviously, you've been to a lot of Olympics and you know people in the NHL. I do understand why the NHL is reluctant to go to the Olympics, because the owners are greedy. They don't like disrupting their schedule. They try to do their own thing. The word I've heard is that there are several really bullying owners who look at what the Olympics gets when everyone loves the game and says, why aren't we making that money? Well, the World Cup of Hockey was a complete disaster. But, you know, Bettman, two weeks ago he was here and he said, it doesn't look like we're going. Is he just posturing to get this insurance signed, or do you, are you 50-50 on this, or do you think they'll be there?
I really think they'll be there. And to me, it was the inclusion of Matt Schneider from the NHLPA at this press conference, which I thought was, it's kind of like being a Kremlinologist. You have to study who's on the podium to figure out where everybody's going. But yeah, that to me just screamed, if the NHLPA signed off on this, they're getting something. And to me, that something is the Olympics. I may have this wrong, and God knows predicting Gary Bettman's next move is an inexact science. But again, I just see the way everything is lined up here, and they just can't, afford a misstep here, where they're trying to, you know, grab, you know, this piece of the world's biggest market, where there is a bit of a hockey presence in China. There has been, like in Harbin in the north, there has been for over a decade. Now there's a team in the KHL in Beijing, Kunlun Red Star. So, I mean, there's a couple of things in place here. But I don't know how you announce this, you know, massive strategy and all these initiatives when you've got the Olympics staring there next door, and go, okay, well, no, we're not going to do that one. That isn't part of our master plan.
But that was the feeling that, you know, obviously 2010, perfect. You're in a North American market. You've got the time zone. 2012, Russia, huge hockey nation, not terribly unfriendly with the time zone. The feeling was Korea, games in the middle of the night. No, we're not going to bother. It's not worth it. But no matter how the NHL has tried to emulate soccer's World Cup in its various forms, it has not taken on. And maybe they're impatient with it. Maybe the World Cup of Toronto, that we just had, in the fall, which didn't resonate with anyone, maybe they need to be patient and stick with that format. But for me, that's what the Olympics has become. We saw it in 98. We saw, like, oh my goodness, Wayne Gretzky and the shootout and everything else. We've seen it develop over the tournaments. Obviously, 2010 was defining. But you got 20, 25-year-olds now who have grown up going, man, I love watching Canada play in the Olympics, which, when you look at the other nations, you want to bring them on board. That's really needed to grow the game. And it seems to me like the NHL doesn't have that long-term vision.
No, it's an interesting one. I didn't think the players would be as militant about participation as they have shown. And I go back to the All-Star game, when guys like Sidney Crosby, who don't speak out about anything, even Connor McDavid, you know, are making very pointed statements about, we need to be at the Olympics in 2018. This is good for the game. You know, the other part of this is the PA feels the NHL is left behind in a lot of revenue streams. And when you think about the NBA has been in China since 2004, they've had 24 preseason games over the last 12 years. I mean, you know, they beat them there. Yeah, I know it helped that they had Yao Ming, and it would help if if China would produce the hockey equivalent
if only he was
Yao Ming.
A grizzly.
Just think of the penalty killer Yao Ming would be, though, if you've been. Anyways, so it's again, you know, and it comes back to this part. So, you know, if they really are as horny for this market as they appear to be, then they will make the necessary steps. I just don't see it playing any other way.
Preseason surprised me a little bit. I thought it would be regular season games. Were the games, refresh my memory, were the games they played in Japan, were they preseason
games? No, they were regular season games. Yeah, and there's ample
precedent.
And they
played
precedent.
Them in London, too, right? Like regular season games.
Oh, there's been a ton. There's actually, if you go on, and I was looking at this there's a whole Wikipedia entry about like all the international NHL games that have been played. And there are a lot, and it was funny because I was talking to Trevor about it, and you know, the kind of orthodoxy is, if you start with one of these overseas games, whether it's in Asia or Europe, it completely disrupts your season. It completely disrupts travel. You end up, you know, and all the rest. And Trevor going, well, yeah, that's true. But Boston in 2010-11 opened their season in Europe and go on to win the Stanley Cup. I can't remember who they beat off the top of my head now. But there's that element is part of it. But again, you know, you just kind of measure things, you know, what everything the NHL has to gain versus what they have to lose. And really, the only people who are lined up in the what we have to lose column is probably, and it isn't even all 31 owners now. I think you're right. I think it's a cabal of about 10 to 15. Are they going to shut the game out? Are they going to deny this great thing that fans are clamoring for, millions and millions of hockey fans are for? I think this is such a test of Bettman's leadership to get this ball across the line.
I just don't see anything else that displays the stars at a level that we do. We've talked on previous podcasts about what a great sports run we're in, and that you look at the NBA finals and Champions League games and you know, the NBA, and there's all these examples of these wondrous moments in sports, and the NHL hasn't produced that, but the Olympics has. Mm-hmm. And if you want people to know your stars and then want to come back and watch your product, especially that market, as you said, Ed, you know, very close in terms of they'll be watching it all on TV. They have an Olympics coming up themselves, or they're certainly looking to bid for more games. I know that they were in strong for the Korea game, Winter Games, didn't get it. These things get shared around. But China's very interested in the Olympics. You look at what they're doing in international soccer, poaching big names to boost their league. China seems to be on a huge sport push right now. You're right, the NHL may be behind, but this is a stream where they might want to cash in.
Oh, and when the government gets behind something in China, it gets done. There is not a lot of dissent there. But you know what?
You have to keep those voters happy, you know.
Strike their constituents. You know, while you're talking, like I was thinking, you know, okay, what's the most memorable hockey moment from the Stanley Cup finals since 98 when the NHL started going to the Olympics? I guess we could probably name one or two off the top of our heads. But now think of like those incandescent moments from the Olympics. And obviously Crosby's golden goal is what resonates in our country. But think of Sweden. Think of Sweden, that, you know, the greatest generation winning the golden Olympics. Like, think of Hasek and Nagano. Think of Pat Quinn and Salt Lake City. Each one of the Olympics. And, you know, even Sochi wasn't like a very memorable tournament by the standard, but you still had that great performance by the Canadians. So, you know, each Olympics has left one of these indelible moments that the NHL can't seem to produce in its marquee event, the Stanley Cup Finals. So, you know, again, I just keep coming back to the same place. I don't know. With so much good that accrues to this, measure that against the financial considerations, you know, against the inconvenience, which is basically what it comes down to.
Can you imagine the goodwill and push the game would get in the States through NBC if the American men won the gold medal? Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be...
Yep.
On next level, really, when you talk about American media. Impact on the Canucks. I mean, is the Chinese market going to go crazy to see if Jason Megner or Jack Skilly can play their way back onto the fourth line next year?
I just had this image of like the talk shows in Beijing, you know, having this like frenzied debate over Jason Megner's place on the power play. But you know, as Trevor said, you know, we are a diverse city and there is a large Asian population here. There's a kid, I don't know if I've mentioned him, Zach Ewan, who's a Vancouver kid. He was a fourth round draft pick of the Winnipeg Jets, played in Tri-City. He's over playing in that KHL team in Beijing. So, I mean, there are starting to, you're starting to see some Chinese, not Chinese national, but, you know, players of Chinese ancestry starting to pop up in major, junior, in, you know, minor, pro. So I don't think it'll be long before it happens. And the game also has some big champions in China, like very rich, very powerful people who are interested in bringing the game over there. And, you know, I think the last 4 days of the NHL being over there were for those people benefit as much as anything.
Now, honestly, I can't think of many things that kind of irritate me more than preseason games in any sport. However, if I do fast forward to the Vancouver Canucks preseason, because training camp's a non-entity anymore, I actually think this team's going to be very interesting to watch. And one of the reasons why is what we've just seen from Brock Boeser. And you know, typically you would go to Canucks preseason and you wouldn't – there was nothing to really wait for. You know, it was – you get to see some guys wearing number 67 in their jersey and see, you know, if
those guys are on the power play this year.
They are now, yes. But, you know, you see which ones are going to make Utica and rest the Sedins and split squads and all this garbage. But now when I look at the young names, and obviously they will add to that this summer with likely a high draft pick or two, I think the preseason game is going to be full of intrigue to see how guys like Demko play.
Yep.
And Brock Boeser probably heads that list, along with we'll see what Yo Levy is doing next year and various other players. But this interesting story that he came in, I know the reasons why he's had family reasons that he wanted to sign and play right away. Talk about he's burning a year of his rookie contract. But, man, sometimes this happens. Austin Matthews scored, what was it, 4 goals in his very first game in the NHL. Yep. Is this just a great story and a bump, or do you like what you've seen from the kids so far?
Well, I this is what I come down to. Like, I spend an afternoon talking to a lot of people who've had contact with him as Coach Brad Berry, you know, members of the Canucks or organization. And the takeaway was, you heard it over and over again, the kid is grounded, he's mature, he's smart, you know, and he's had a lot of things happen into his life that have made him grow up maybe a little quicker than his parents wanted him to, but I think he can handle that. I still don't like the move. I just think for what they were gaining versus, and it just kind of like smacked of a bit of desperation, a bit too much PR, and not what was in the best interest of the kid. But I also recognize that not everybody is cut out of the same bowl of cloth, and some people can handle the notoriety. Some people, as a matter of fact, thrive under it, and those are the guys you want on your team. So he seems to be that kid. You know, you were talking about the preseason. Where, you know, we were talking about this in the press box the other day. I mean, you kind of look at the battles that are going to be shaping up on the right wing, where you know, Boeser is. So you've got like Granlund playing the Twins. Now you've got Boeser. Now you've got forgotten man Jake Virtanen, who's been on this fabulous weight loss program in Utica, but by all accounts appears to be playing better. You've got the draft pick coming. You've got Michael Chaput, who of all those guys wearing the 40s and 50s and 60s, seems to be a guy who might fit into some kind of long-range plan. You've got guys who've been injured coming back. So, yeah, I think there will be some real competition there next year. And you've also got, you know, the backdrop of the rebuild and how that's going and how these young players are going to fit in.
Well, and let's not forget Goldobin and Dahlin. That's where, as I said, I hate preseason, but it looks like there's actually things to watch here as we go into next season. And we've famously seen guys like Jesse Schultz do well in a scrimmage and be overhyped. To Mason Raymond had a great training camp.
Steve Kria.
Steve Kria, all over the place. But the Boeser certainly is setting up now. And I think we can be cynical about it, but this to me is a move purely to sell season tickets. Fans want hope. It obviously worked for Boeser. He wanted to sign now for family reasons. But this is now, the kid's got 2 goals in the space of a week. This is a guy you're going to see feature heavily in their marketing for next year. And I think this is what fans have wanted, right?
No, they did. But I think they just have to be really careful that they don't make this the Brock Boeser show. Like, he's a very good prospect. He's a high-end prospect, but he's not that complete game changer. He's a big piece of the puzzle, and that's great. But I just think that can go south on you in a hurry if you build too much attention around. If you make him the focal point of this, you know, they've got a bunch of, you know, within 2 years, you can probably rattle off the names of half a dozen players who are Besser like. He's the first one. He's the thin edge of the plow that are all going to be here. And I think that's what they need to sell. They don't need to sell Brock Besser. They need to sell this larger plan.
Can I ask you a question about development? The Canucks, obviously, you look at current players on their roster and where they've gone with draft picks, they really do seem to like the U.S. college system. Mm-hmm. Is it trickier to judge someone's progress in that venue rather than junior hockey? I mean, I know there's Adam Gaudette, fifth round pick,
yeah,
racked up some pretty gaudy numbers this year in terms of his offense and power play, et cetera, et cetera. But we've seen guys before kind of flame out. Other guys like Justin Schultz, I guess, had to find the right fit. Junior hockey versus college, does it make a difference to you? Can you get a read on how someone is and that maybe there's a maturity level or anything else there?
Yeah, okay, I'm going to paint with really broad strokes here. There's a couple of things. I think for the undrafted free agent, if I'm a GM, I'm more inclined to gamble on the college player. The late bloomer who develops at 20, 21, and those seem to be the ones who are capable. I mean, we don't have to think too far back. You know, Chris Tanev was on nobody's radar. Yeah. And basically, the Canucks got the equivalent of a first round value with this free agent signing. He's not the only one. So that's one thing. I think the other thing, the fact that you are playing against 2020, a little more mature player, I think you get a little better read on where your prospect is, you know, and I think, you know, Besser after his sophomore year, you know, and he put up big numbers. I mean, that to me just screams an elite prospect. You know, having said that, I think when you measure things up and down, you're still inclined to go with the major junior player. And I think the data supports that the Ontario League has been the best at developing NHL talent. But there's a couple of things there, I think, where you do lean toward the college player, you know, the things I just outlined.
Yeah, no, it just, I think that's, you can see a guy put up big numbers in college and you frequently do, and it amounts to very little in the NHL. I know that happens in junior hockey as well. Just curious as to the development. Obviously, you see more goonery in junior hockey as well. It's a little more of the traditional old time hockey coaches.
Yeah.
I think in junior, we think back to the days of Punch McLean and garbage cans flying onto the ice. Well, mind you, they do have Bobby Knight in the college system as well. So I'm not going to say it's not tolerated there, but I find that development question interesting when you see a guy who's done so well down there. Goalies, obviously, we had Corey Schneider here. You got Thatcher Demko now, who's in the system. It certainly seems like the college system's growing. Like, that's a good way for development. And it has served the Canucks well, as you pointed out. That's the thing with this team is there's so many questions about so many prospects that makes it next year, I think, is going to be a lot of fun.
I think it breaks down this way. The junior teams kind of thrive on competition, on the schedule, on a number of games. College programs, it's more about coaching. It's more about, you know, like that training through the week. And then they play, I think they play on, I think if a team makes a deep run in the playoffs, they'd be in the 30s in the game. So you're not getting as much game. You know, the travel's a lot easier, but you know, you are getting all this practice time, and the coaches of those college programs are usually first-rate coaches too. So, you know, maybe you're getting a little more well-rounded player, but you know, in terms of developing, you know, the competitiveness, the mental toughness, grittiness. to grind out, you know, the 82 game NHL schedule. I think those junior leagues are probably a bit little better training ground.
Let's flip this back to the Canucks a little bit. Then we've seen a clear switch in direction in this last part of the season that they were willing to go with the kids to give up on the playoff dream and say, no, we want to see how some of these guys play. We want to see development, you know, certain players excluded, of course. You already mentioned Vertanen and Subban seems to be in that category as well. But what do you think this organization's appetite is going to be next year to say, no, we're still all in on youth development? Or I know they'll start the season. They have to sell tickets saying they're in on the playoffs. But honestly, what do you, is this switch now that we've seen in this, in sort of the brain trust mentality. Is this just temporary, or do you think they can carry this through next season?
Well, I don't think it starts next season. I really think it starts in earnest the season after that, and more specifically, I don't think it's going to be till 1920.
Well, but that's common sense.
You see the whole, but really, so you just go up and down the lineup, and really, we're now talking about Besser, and we might be talking about Goldobin. Ulevi isn't ready yet. Demko is going to start the year. They're not going to sign Adam Gaudette. Vertanen is kind of like, I mean, he's kind of a 50-50 ball right now to make the team, in my opinion. I think he's going to get, you know, the benefit of the doubt just based on his position in the draft, but he is by no means a lock to make the team. So I'm just not, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of the same faces with, you know, again, maybe one or two, you know, pieces added to the program, but now you're going to, you know, after that, now you're going to see, I guess, Ulevi will probably be ready. Where are you? We're 17 or 16, 17, 18, 19 would, I think, be when he's announced. And I think that would probably be the same of whoever they pick in the first round this year. And Gaudette, that's the long range plan for Gaudette to, you know, introduce him, give him another year in college. So all of a sudden, you're talking about three players there. You're talking about Besser, maybe Goldobin. That's five players. And you throw them. You throw Demko and Dede, all of a sudden you're talking about over a third of your team. And I mean, that is significant.
Yeah. And as I said, I've mentioned Dahlin a couple of times. He, when they traded for him, I saw all this stuff, you know, people raving about him. And because Goldobin and Baser have come in, people have stopped talking about him. And there'll be hysteria when he gets here. Yeah. But I just think from this mindset that they're okay to go all in on development at this point, you know, you call it tank, call it whatever you want. No one's deliberately trying to lose games. But if you're trying to see how young players handle a situation versus trying to win the game, it's a completely different mentality. I wonder what their offseason plan is. If a big trade is presented to you for a prospect, do you go after that? Do you even try and play in the free agent market this year?
Yeah,
you and I talked earlier, there's no one there that looks like they're a decent fit. But as we've said before with this team, you never know what ownership wants.
Well, okay, to me, the whole thing comes down to a question of what they do with Ryan Miller. So if, you know, if they sign him in anything more than like a one-year, $3 million deal, if they sign him to anything more than that, then they're still kind of harboring this illusion that they can be competitive and compete for a playoff spot. If they let him go, then I think they're all in on the rebuild. That, you know, and I think most Canucks fans would be fine with Markstrom and Backman or somebody like that as their goaltending tandem, and, you know, giving Demko a little more time to develop. I mean, I'm just struck by the parallels between Demko's development and Corey Schneider's. Yeah. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Just how they paralleled each other. And, you know, God, if he's that caliber of goalie, you know, they've got something.
You know, the other thing I'm struck by, Ed, and this goes back to Luongo, is how stubborn the goalie market is. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was all this talk about how LA were in on Miller, Anaheim might be in on Miller, you know, all these teams that were on the playoff fringes. And I look at it now, and Miller's had, to be honest with you, a spectacular season. Could he have been the difference in a team like LA getting in the playoffs, or some other teams maybe going deeper in the playoffs? I think he would be, absolutely. And it would make sense. He's only got, you know, the rest of the year left on his contract. But for some reason, the goalie market seems so soft. Yeah, I would have thought Luongo would have drawn way more interest, aside from the second contract.
Yeah, well, if Miller goes anywhere, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Anaheim, because it's going to be a Western team. I don't think he wants any part of the expansion experience in Las Vegas. And from what I understand, Vegas is going to go young with their goalies too. So they've got Anaheim has John Gibson. I think, and don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure Jonathan Bernier is a free agent after this year. So you've got the young guy. Miller can come in, and I think he's willing to accept. I think he sees the reality of his situation. He's kind of a 30-40 game mentor Yoda type now. He's not that elite starting goalie anymore.
Just before we go, I wanted your thoughts on how this season has panned out. Now, we've obviously seen some great stories when I say local, I mean Western Canada. When you look at the Flames and Oilers, LA may be a surprise that they've still got that Stanley Cup core, but it's clearly not coming together for them. Still looking at Pittsburgh, Washington, perhaps Chicago, but they're so flighty, depending on, you know, who their opponent is. when you look at the NHL now, headed into the first round, it's not that far away. Who do you really like here? And is there a team in there you think could surprise, or what do you think we're going to see develop? Is it down to the top four?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go with chalk. I think Chicago is the best bet. That doesn't mean by any stretch of the imagination that they're an overwhelming favorite or they're the team to be. I'm just saying right here, right now, they're the best bet. I think they have the most complete team. They've certainly got the pedigree, all those things you look for. But I mean, they could also go out. It's one of those things. They could go all the way. They could get knocked out in the first round and neither would surprise me. I look at a couple of teams that are hot right now and I like Nashville at the start of the year. I just like their team. And, you know, it took them a while to get, you know, Subban got injured.
Oh, they were behind the Canucks a month ago.
No, I know. He's kind of a tricky piece, but I just love the makeup of their team. And they're a team for me that could surprise. Minnesota's an interesting, the Western Conference teams obviously a lot more because they look so good for so long and now they've hit a little bit of adversity and you can throw San Jose into that mix too. Minnesota, you know, they've kind of got, and to me, they're interesting because it's kind of what the Canucks are trying to emulate. They really don't have a superstar unless you count Ryan Suter as a superstar, but they've got an awful lot of A-minus, B-plus players to the point where they can get a guy like Charlie Coyle. And if he isn't going, they can drop him to the fourth line. Charlie Coyle would probably be the Canucks' best forward second best if he was on their team. So I think that's what the Canucks are trying to do. They're trying to build like depth and quality throughout the lineup. And I'm going to be really curious to see if that translates for the Wild into the playoffs because they have to get through the first round so that their depth will take over. But we've kind of seen in the NHL, in the playoffs, a lot of times it's still about the team with those like high octane guys, those like marquee guys who can put a team on their back and carry them, whether it's Carey Price and goal or whether it's Taze and Kane up front.
Crosby, of course.
Exactly. Crosby, which is funny because like Pittsburgh flies in the face of so much traditional logic. Yeah. But you come back to it. They've got Crosby and Malkin as their two centers. So
exactly.
You know, that's it. And then is this Washington's year finally?
That's the interesting question to me. Is it more of the same with your Chicago? Certainly you got Pittsburgh and Washington on the other side, or are we going to see a changing the guard and see a Minnesota or someone in the final? It was shaping up as such a great story with John Tortorella in Columbus earlier in the year, and they've cooled off, but I mean, there's that freshness. I think the NHL would really welcome with teams like maybe you get an unknown goal in a run, even the Oilers and God forbid the Leafs being in the playoffs. You know, you just know the hysteria. Well, we'll laugh at it and we'll turn our nose up at it. I think it's good for hockey. It's good conversation.
It totally
points.
Isn't. It's going
to
make
someone
it,
cheer against
well, it,
at least.
It's going to make the first round. And how many times have we said it? The first round of the playoffs is now the NHL's marquee event. And this one's going to be fascinating because you're going to see so many of these matchups of upstarts versus established power. And then I think after that first round, you're going to see, you know, like, is this going to be same old with the usual suspects? Or are you going to see an Edmonton, a Calgary, a Toronto making a splash, a Columbus, which would be so. I am calling right now a Calgary Columbus final with Pittsburgh in there somewhere because I still blows my mind that coaching staff the Canucks had in the Tortorella tire fire season are in the jobs they're in now because it's amazing.
Gullitson versus Torts in the final. That would be spectacular. We might even get budget to send someone for that. Anything else on your mind this week?
No, not really. I guess, you know, I'd like to see the Whitecaps do something, but they're in Los Angeles, you know, like where they win every, you know, they're like the Olympics. They win there every 4 years.
Disastrous start to the season.
Yeah. No, it truly has been. It truly has been. And they need to start now. Again, they're kind of, they're in LA. So they're, you know, like out of sight, out of mind thing. They are, to me, they're in a really dangerous spot right now.
They are. I mean, I guess if you hold out hope, you look at Seattle, fired their coach midseason and got on the season so damn long. They got on a run at the right time and ended up winning the championship. And I had believed in Carl Robinson, but I got to say, you know, people crap all over the MLS referees, but, you know, the red card to Breck Shea that blew apart the game against Toronto. Inexcusable. I mean, it was a bad foul and he told the referee to go F himself, apparently. And allegedly, the teams had been warned before the season that this was going to be cracked down on. And this has been the Whitecaps. I mean, you look at the red card. Ousted got a red card. You know, Waston is always last year was a loose cannon. Yeah, yeah. They're a team that lacks discipline, and that I'm sorry, it comes from the top.
No, it's been going on for 3 years. You could point, and there's been one or two where you go like, "What the hell?"
But every other team has the same refs. But
when it's the same thing over and over and over and over again, you have to look at the mirror at some point. And it's not like they're, a big rough, like that's their identity. They're this rough and tumble team. You know, they've got Waston in the back, and he's certainly that player, but the rest of the team, not so much. No, it really is a matter of discipline, and that comes back to the head coach.
Absolutely. And, they need to get it together because they're in danger of losing this market. They really are. Yeah. And once you get the Lions going, you have hope, and the Canucks offseason is really this season for the fans. I mean, there's so much excitement in this market over the draft, mm-hmm. over trades and over free agency. No. That is what people are looking forward to more than
draft lottery day. The most exciting day in the Canucks calendar.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So the Whitecaps have a lot of work to do to remain relevant in this market. And I hope they can pull it off because I am a fan. I do like watching it, but and I'll watch the LA game this weekend, but you're right. I'm not sure how many other people will.
I'm sorry. There are two other things. When I'm going to the Vogue tonight to see Chad Brownlee and to see Odds and to see Aaron Pritchett. Not a huge country music fan, but I listened to a bit of Chad's stuff, and there's a little something going on there. He hasn't sold his soul completely to commercial country music. And then the other one, Calgary's in town on Friday, and it's, you just cannot see that team and watch Matthew Tkachuk and wonder how good he would look in a Canucks uniform right now. I know there's still a long way to go before that one is measured, but did you see him last night against the Kings? Like, this is a 19-year-old kid challenging Jake Muzzin to a fight, running Drew Doughty, and the Canucks have such zero physicality to their game right now. He's exactly what they need.
Yeah, I got to admit, I didn't like the elbow on Doughty, but then look at his dad, right? I mean,
you don't like it, but unfortunately, it's still part of the game.
Listen to what Willie said about Tramkin and Marchand. It's, you're right, it's part of the game, And you just knew in last year's draft where the Canucks landed. You just knew that there was going to be this giant question mark no matter where they went,
mm-hmm.
right? Like everyone wanted them to get Pierre-Luc and Dubois. And then, you know, there was, well, will Laine fall to them? Because there was a bit of a surprise up at the top. That leaves them Tkachuk, and they went in another direction.
Yeah.
It was sort of like whichever way they went, you knew there was going to, and right now, absolutely looks like, I mean, he's everything I think they hoped Jake Virtanen would be.
Yes, absolutely. So you've got the two drafts, right? So in the Virtanen draft, they go for the power forward, pass on the skill guy, who could have been Ehlers, could have been Nylander, could have been anybody. Like I said, there's still got a long way to go. And I had some fairly lively Twitter wars that when I pointed out that Nylander has 46 points more for the Leafs than Virtanen has playing in Utica. They go for the skill guy, Ylevi, over the power guy, Tkachuk. Yeah. So anyways.
Yeah, shoulda, coulda, woulda. That's 45 years of that from the Canucks. hope you shoulda, coulda, woulda listened to this. Hopefully you got to the end. We will continue to take fan mail suggestions. Anything you'd like us to cover, just send them in. I don't know, Chad Brownlee, Ed's going there tonight at the Vogue. Maybe which other Canucks would be fitting for country music? I can think of a few.
A Canucks country music song. I think that's what we should point out there.
Yeah. My power play broke. My penalty killing died. and my goalie left me. Something like that. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week.